Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today, you'll hear Seth's interview with MSNBC anchor Chris Hayes, who continues the conversation backstage at Studio 8G just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
Congress has been rocked by its own sexual misconduct allegations this week, with Senator Al Franken being accused of sexual harassment, and yet more women coming forward to accuse Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore of sexually assaulting them as teenagers. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. The avalanche of sexual harassment allegations in the last few weeks has shown us that predatory behavior is everywhere, in virtually every aspect of society, in the news business, in entertainment, and in politics. Every day, there are more revelations, and this week, we started to get a sense of just how pervasive sexual harassment is in Congress, too.
There are two members of Congress, Republican and Democrat, right now, who serve, who have been subject to review, or not have been subject to review, but have engaged in sexual harassment. These harasser propositions, such as, are you going to be a good girl, to perpetrators exposing their genitals, to victims having their private parts grabbed on the House floor.
That is awful. I'd say Congress is full of dicks, but most of them look more like ball sacks. And today we also learned yet again, as if more evidence was needed, that this is not a partisan problem. There are sexual harassers of all political persuasions in both parties. Take Minnesota Senator Al Franken. Today, an anchor for KABC in Los Angeles said, Senator Al Franken kissed and groped me without my consent during a USO tour in 2006 and shared this photo of Franken groping her while she was asleep. That is horrifying. And she's wearing Army gear because it's a USO tour. But honestly, who could blame women if they started wearing military gear whenever they're around men? Where are you going in a helmet and a flak jacket? The subway. This is a pervasive problem that affects every aspect of society and every political party, and everyone should be held accountable, from Al Franken to Roy Moore to Bill Clinton to the current president of the United States. And yet, amid all of this, there are still Republicans defending Moore, their nominee for Senate in Alabama, who, of course, has been accused of sexually assaulting underage girls. Take, for example, Alabama Congressman Mo Brooks, who said he still plans to support Moore because the conservative agenda is vastly more important than contested sexual allegations from four decades ago. An ABC reporter tried to ask Brooks if he believes the very credible accounts of the women who accused Moore of sexual assault, and Brooks literally ran away from him during the interview.
You believe him, you don't believe the women?
Bad day to wear my tap shoes. I tell Mo Brooks to go to hell, but it looks like that's where he's trying to get. That whole scene reminds me of the M.C. Escher drawing titled The Chicken. Of course, part of the reason Republicans are so desperate to ignore questions about Moore is that even the ones who say they believe his accusers can't explain why they don't also believe the women who have accused President Trump of sexual assault. A reporter for the Huffington Post valiantly tried to get Wyoming Senator Mike Enzi to answer that question, but Enzi wouldn't budge. I'm working on taxes right now and concentrating on that and heading to a meeting where I have to speak, and that's what I'm concentrating on. Enzi said, walking quickly down a Senate hallway. Asked if he has any thoughts at all on the Moore scandal, he replied, my thoughts are on taxes if you want to talk about taxes. Okay, do you want to tax Roy Moore? Asked HuffPost. Enzi said nothing and walked away. You got to admire the Huffington Post effort. Reporters should just keep doing that until Republicans answer the question. Look, I just want to talk about building a wall. Okay, should we build a wall between teenagers and Roy Moore? A reporter for NBC News similarly tried to get an answer about Moore from Arkansas Republican Senator Tom Cotton with no luck. Here's that transcript. Do you think that Roy Moore should drop out of the race? No comment. Do you have any comment at all about his alleged? No comment. Do you support his candidacy? No comment. Elevator doors close. So technically, the elevators had more to say in that transcript than Tom Cotton. So hey, elevator, do you think Roy Moore should drop out? Yes. The refusal by many Republicans, including the president, to discuss Moore's situation comes as we keep getting information about how creepy his behavior was. Earlier this week, it was reported that Moore was actually banned from the Gadsden Mall and the YMCA. He got banned from the YMCA despite dressing exactly like one of the Village People. Now, yesterday on MSNBC, Moore's lawyer, Trenton Garman, tried to dispute the claim that Moore was banned from the mall. But in the process, he seemed to confirm that there were indeed complaints about his behavior.
I was engaged in litigation with the Gadsden Mall. It had a settlement that was confidential. I'm intimately familiar. There were procedures inside of the Gadsden Mall, and there, from what I have been told, is never been a list with Roy Moore banned from being at the mall. So they processed that out, and they determined, no, whatever it is that someone has said has made them uncomfortable, we don't find it to be worthy to put them on a list.
Is it not cause for concern that there would even be any sort of settlement with the Gadsden Mall? Roy Moore was in his 30s. No. What type of settlement would there be?
No, there was not a settlement with Roy Moore. It had nothing to do. Roy Moore has never had a settlement with the Gadsden Mall. I'm talking about my personal experience as a litigator. I have represented people against the Gadsden Mall.
Wait, you've been a lawyer in other cases of People v. Mall? So I guess if you've been banned from the mall and need a lawyer, Trenton Garman is your man. But the weirdest part of the interview that Moore's lawyer gave to MSNBC came when he tried to defend Moore's claim that he always asked for permission from a girl's mother before dating her. Garman tried to argue that that kind of behavior was common in other cultures and threw in some gross racism when he tried to cite MSNBC anchor Ali Velshi's background to bolster his case.
Why would he need permission from any of these girls' mothers if they weren't underage?
Sure, that's a good question. And culturally speaking, obviously there's differences. I looked up Ali's background there. Wow, that's awesome that you have got such a diverse background. It's really cool to read through that. But point is this.
What does Ali's background have to do with dating a 14-year-old?
I'm not finished with the context of it.
Well, please answer. What does Ali Velshi's background have to do with dating under children, 14-year-old girls?
Sure. In other countries, there's arrangement through parents for what we would refer
Allie's
to as
from
consensual marriage. So,
Ali's from Canada.
So either Trenton Garman is a racist or he thinks Canada has arranged marriages. And yet, in spite of all this damning evidence about Moore's predatory and grotesque behavior, Trump still has said nothing about what Moore should do. In fact, yesterday he spoke at the White House about his trip to Asia and completely ignored questions about Moore from reporters.
America is back, and the future has never looked brighter. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless the United States of America. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you all.
Should Roy Moore resign, Mr. President? Do you believe his accusers? Do you believe the accusers of Roy Moore, Mr. President? Should he resign?
If the future is so bright, why do you look so bummed out walking away?
So everything is great, and there's nothing to be upset about.
And while some Republicans are desperate to ignore the questions, others are urging Trump to take a stand, like South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, who had this to say about Moore.
I met a lot of people in the mall, and if you're getting kicked out of the mall, that's a pretty bad situation to find yourself in.
I mean, I agree, but why have you met a lot of people in the mall? I got a booth. It's called Lindsay's Nut Hut. It's mostly pecans. Those pecans are as sweet as old Lindsay. This is a society-wide problem born out of systemic misogyny and abuse of power, and both parties need to take it seriously, no matter who's accused. Don't you agree, Congressman Mo Brooks? This has been A Closer Look. Our guest tonight is the Emmy-winning host of All In with Chris Hayes, which airs weeknights at 8 p.m. on MSNBC. Please welcome back to the show our friend Chris Hayes, everybody. Thank you so much for coming up.
It's always my great pleasure to commute the four floors up.
It is four floors up. And I do want to speak, this is very noble of you, because you do your show live. We are pre-taping, so you actually have to leave here and go do your show. And you basically have to give up an hour. A million things could happen in that hour.
I fully anticipate that the Senate will be down to about 60 members.
Yeah.
But by the time that I get back down
that's
to the
that's
show.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Majority will be much less. One of the things that seems to be getting a little lost and sort of the more salacious things that are happening every day is the tax plan. House voted on one today. You have sort of talked about on your show that the math that the Republicans are pushing does not quite add up.
You know, two-thirds of the tax cut is for corporations.
Yes.
Right? And the idea, the sort of sales pitch is we're going to give it to CEOs and corporations. They're going to take that money and turn around and be like, you get a job. You get a job. New factory here. Raises here. And the other day, Gary Cohn, economic advisor, is in a room full of CEOs. And someone stands up and says, raise your hand if you're going to give people raises and invest in capital investment. And, like, no one raises their hand.
Yeah. And he did it. He was hoping that it would be a sea of hands.
He even said, why aren't people's hands up?
Yeah.
It's like, because it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So it's really a pretty crazy thing. It also is the case that if you look at the numbers, it's a tax hike for a lot of middle-income Americans by the end of this thing. They passed a tax hike today, which, if you got a Republican member of Congress and you live in an affluent suburb, New Jersey or California, New York, what is the point of electing a Republican if your taxes are going to go up?
Yeah.
Like, why are you doing?
Yeah, there's not a lot that the Republican Party is crushing it on other than that.
That is a thing that you elect your Republican congressman to go to Washington and prevent from happening.
So does this speak to the fact that even though we have a president who ran on this real populist message and spoke to a lot of people that no one had addressed before, and you have to give him credit for at least knowing that there was that voting block out there, but it seems like this is a tax plan that is written by the donor class.
It is 100% donor class driven. And that's not even, that's not me saying it. I mean, Lindsey Graham says we're basically toast with the donors if we don't pass this. Chris Collins, who's a congressman, said, like, we got to do this for the donors. They've been saying the quiet part loud about what the motivation for this is. And it really is what one senator said to me was donor maintenance.
Wow. That's not great. That doesn't sound like a great.
Donor maintenance sounds like it's like you're grooming a pet or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or a donor goes in and you put them up like on hydraulics and have to look underneath. So I want to talk, obviously, we have, wave after wave of these sexual harassment, sexual assault allegations, and the situation today with Senator Franken. Now, it seemed like the Democratic Party reacted a lot quicker to say this is not okay. Senator Franken himself said that he would go in front of an ethics committee. He issued an apology, two apologies today, I think. Maybe realized the first apology wasn't strong enough, came out with another one. On the other side, you have Roy Moore, who is not apologizing. There's certainly more accusers on that side as well. Is there a difference in how the parties are dealing with these situations?
I think there is, although it's hard to say because getting any apples-to-apples comparisons are tough, right? I mean, what Al Franken's alleged to have done, and say alleged in a kind of protective way, but basically I think probably did.
Yep. Certainly there's a photo, which, that's not helpful.
Is terrible behavior. That he should be held to account for and is unacceptable. It's in a different category than what appears to be an alleged habit of serially attempting to groom, cultivate, pursue, and sexually assault teenage girls, which is what Roy Moore is accused of doing. And so I think, like, it's hard to say, well, which party is doing this okay, because there's just different fact patterns. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is, the Republican Party en masse nationally has basically come to reject Roy Moore. Mitch McConnell said, I believe the women. Jeff Sessions said, I believe the women. The state party is standing by him, and the president is totally absent. I mean, Donald Trump has opinions on everything from the HR policy at ESPN to the levels of sufficient gratitude from UCL basketball players.
Right.
There is nothing this guy doesn't have opinion about. I mean, he sits in Fox and Friends and live tweets everything.
Yeah.
But on the question of whether the person credibly accused of serial sexual assault and molestation of teenage girls should be your party's nominee,
he's like, bro.
Yeah. I mean, is this, do we think this is a case of whatever he says will lead immediately to a follow-up question of how it relates to the accusations against him?
You know, it was so indicative to me that they want to have nothing to do with this conversation today when they didn't take the bait on Franken. Yeah. Sarah Huckabee Sanders is up at the podium. She gets asked a question about Franken. She says, well, they've called for an ethics investigation, and, you know, we support that moving right along. And you can tell, usually that is a hit they're happy to take.
Right.
Right? Like, usually that is red meat from that podium. The fact that she just sort of shut that down and moved on suggests to me that they understand that what is happening society-wide means that nothing got definitively litigated a year ago when between, you know, more than a dozen women came forward to say that Donald Trump had made unwanted sexual advances or sexually assaulted them.
And do you think that we have also moved on too quickly from those accusations, or is it just that so much happens in the Trump presidency that it's impossible to keep things on the burner, so to speak?
That's a really good question. I think there is some degree to which we've moved on too quickly from them. I also think there is a connection, and this is not my insight. This is a lot of feminist writers who I admire and have been reading, that there is a connection between he essentially got away with it and the moment we're having now. Right. Like the reckoning now, the tsunami, the crashing of all of these pent-up secrets and rage and righteous indignation of what people have, women have had to bear, and not just women, men too, as we're learning in the case of Kevin Spacey and others, that is connected to what happened a year ago. That watching him, watching that Access Hollywood tape come out, watching women come forward and say, he did this to me, and watching him call them liars, watching him joke that they were too unattractive for him to want to go after, threatening to sue them, and get away with it is what part of what has triggered the moment we're in now.
You have talked about, I agree, that we maybe have done ourselves a disservice of adapting to how outrageous and shocking the news is every day, that we've lost our capacity to be shocked by it.
You know, the incredible superpower of human beings is that they can make things normal. Their adaptability, right? So what's the species that can live in the Amazon and the Arctic?
Right.
Right? And the reason is we're very good at just being like, well, it's cold all the time. Like we're going to build an igloo and we're going to hunt some whales and we're going to get through. And so because that is the human being superpower, that is the essence in some ways of being a human. You adjust and acclimate to whatever situation you find yourself in. And so the president goes on Twitter and says, I am, in front of all of you, officially instructing my attorney general to open an investigation of my chief political rival. Like, no, you can't do that.
Right.
If you did that in secret and we found out about it, that might be impeachable. If Barack Obama did that, it would probably be impeachable. But because we're sort of acclimated, like, oh, he's tweeting again.
Yeah.
Like, it is amazing in some ways what we are able to acclimate to.
Well, the other thing that's amazing is it seems like it's not just people who are critical of the president and sort of on the opposing side. It seems like people within the president's inner circle also say, hey, you can't listen to what he says or writes or does. Like, that's not fair to take him at his word. He's full of like, don't you think that's what they're saying?
Yes, in fact, and I actually think one of my theories about the man is that in some weird way, I think we think of him as avaricious and ambitious and he wants to be powerful. I think it's the opposite. I think what he actually wants is the trappings of the office, but he mostly wants to be a guy live tweeting Fox and Friends.
Yeah.
I don't think he actually, in a weird way, I don't think he wants a responsibility. Like, he wants to be the guy at the bar that everyone has to listen to.
Yeah.
And I think he likes living in the Oval Office. But when it's like, hey, sir, we've got a tough decision to make here about what we're doing in North Korea, it's like, I'd rather live tweet Fox and
yeah.
Friends. You know what I mean? So it's like, not only do his defenders say, well, that's just him talking, in an own way, like, he doesn't seem to care about what actually happens in the world. What he cares about is that the attention's on him.
So you think if we just let him, like, take the Oval Office and, like, remove it and, like, roll it to New York.
Truman
and,
show it.
And he could just do a podcast.
If you gave Donald Trump a podcast,
yeah.
He would be so happy.
Yeah.
And the world would be such a better place.
I would love it. I would listen to a Donald Trump podcast.
Yeah. A podcast.
All right. Well, I guess we just pitch it to him and see what happens.
Sir, we need about 30 minutes of your time.
Yeah, we need about 30 minutes.
Right in and out.
Thanks so much for being here. It's always a pleasure. Have a great show tonight.
Thanks a lot, man. Thank you.
Chris Hayes, everybody. All in with Chris Hayes. It's weeknights at 8 p.m. on MSNBC.
Hey, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Chris Hayes. Chris, you just finished your interview, and now we're walking you to the third floor where your show is. So I wanted to ask you, today was a story of multiple breaking news stories. How different did today feel? Did I just do the wrong floor?
Yeah, you did. It's four. It's fine. I was going to correct you on the podcast, but I didn't want to show
no,
you
No, let's
up,
make sure we get that.
Oh, there's a big turkey
there's
in the
literally a giant turkey in the elevator.
Donald Trump's first turkey pardon's about to happen this week.
Oh.
Donald Trump's first turkey pardon is happening this week. Do you know
man.
That? And like
no,
everyone's just like,
be.
What is like, someone I saw, someone making a joke on Twitter, like, I guarantee he'll be in a feud with a turkey by the end of the week.
Yeah, I'll be very upset with like, the choice of turkey.
He'll insult the weight of the tweeting at the turkey. Yeah, today was, you know, it's weird. We've weirdly acclimated to like crazy breaking news days where we have, you know, a rundown. You know, there's like a morning meeting where we sketch out a skeletal rundown. Then there's an editorial meeting at 1:00. Where usually we, in normal times, would kind of set, nail down the rundown.
Yeah.
But we've kind of, it's a little like option routes in football, where we'll sort of be like, well, this is tentatively this, but if something breaks on this topic, we can move this to this.
Yes, yeah. So you've built in systems, so
yes, we've gotten a little better at like, from just ripping everything up and starting from scratch and like desperately trying to book people to sort of, we'll even kind of like, we'll book a backup block.
Really?
A lot of times on Russia stuff particularly because those things tend to break at 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And so one of the things we'll do is make sure we have some people that can talk about the ongoing Russia investigation just in case at, you know, 6 o'clock or something.
Oh, so depending on what you're talking about on the show, like you just have someone to talk about Russia in case that adds. Not that you're necessarily talking about Russia that day.
Right,
just
exactly.
Like, that because, story no, breaks because, so often.
Because it's happened to us so many times that there's been some kind of, here, we can just stay here.
Yeah.
There's been some kind of story at 5:30 or 6. And
right.
We got so tired of desperately calling around and like trying to get someone into Midtown.
Right.
Or to a studio somewhere. So we... It'll be like very late in the day before we're like, okay, we're going to release officially our Russiagate guest because,
right.
You know, there's nothing brewing on it today.
That's amazing. Yeah, that story does break. It seems to break always at 5 or
I
6.
Think today, and we tape at 6:30. Something broke while we were doing Seth's show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't looked at Twitter. Was it hard to be on the show and not look at Twitter? Like at during
no,
this time
oh
of the day?
Oh, my God. It's such a glorious deliverance. Good. It's like so wonderful. Like, the only thing that stops me from being like, on Twitter is, like, literally doing a television show.
Right. right.
Oh, that's funny, Seth. Let me just scroll through my mentions here.
Yeah. I would have loved if you were just on Twitter during the show. Like, hey, did you see this? Did you see this thing? This is, wow, look at that. That's also...
Also, it's a tape show. It's, like, breaking right now at...
Oh, in 6 hours. Like, none of what you said tonight's relevant.
No, yeah, exactly.
Also, by the time people listen to this, it's like, what happened? This will all be completely irrelevant. It's so good seeing you.
Great to see you, too, man.
Have a good show.
All right, keep crushing.
Thanks, buddy. I'll see you soon.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.